Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Stephen Carla, political psychologist, who is the director of the Program for Public Consultation and a senior research scholar at the Center for International Security Studies at Maryland University in Maryland. For the last 18 years, he's conducted in-depth studies of public opinion on public policy issues and has worked extensively with U.S. congressional staffers, State Department officials, and officials at the United Nations to develop surveys that help policymakers gain greater insight into the public values and beliefs. He has consulted with or testified to the United States Congress, NATO, and the European Commission. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephen Cull.
Thanks for having me.
And the latest study that you've done, consulting the American people on national defense spending, you found that three-quarters of the respondents favor cutting defense in a way to reduce the deficit, including two-thirds of Republicans as well as 9 out of 10 Democrats. That flies in the face of what's happening with the U.S. House of Representatives, where the Republican majority is refusing to make any cuts in the defense budget, even though they signed a sequestered deal to do so.
Yeah, there is opposition to that action, though actually the law in place right now would call for some kind of a cut of about 10% unless a collective decision is made to the contrary.
But at this point, they're not going along with the 10% cuts.
Well, they're opposing them, yes.
Yes.
But the law in place right now says that this would occur unless there is an action against it.
Right, but my understanding is the action against it is that they're trying to come up with a substitute bill that would cut money from things like food stamps and leave defense untouched.
That's correct.
So this study of yours then indicates that there is a disconnect between the House of Representatives and the American people.
Yes, I think you would have to say that there's a real discrepancy between what is going on in the House and public opinion generally, and even among the Republicans in this country. We need to make clear that most Americans are not eager to cut defense. And if you just ask them straight up, do you want to cut defense, you don't have a majority saying, yes, let's do that. What was unique about this study was that we gave them information about how much spending goes to defense as compared to other items in the discretionary budget, how much we're spending now as compared to the past, how much we spend compared to Social Security and Medicare, how much we spend relative to enemies and allies. And on the whole, they were pretty surprised. It was more than they had expected. So when they got that information, when they had a more complete picture, and were also presented arguments for and against cutting, very strongly stated arguments that have been approved by advocates on both sides of the question, then when they really had a chance to think about it, large majority said, yes, let's make some substantial cuts.
So in other words, some of the basic information that's out there, for example, that the U.S. spends more on defense than I think just almost everybody in the world combined, certainly considerably more than the combined possible enemies, and we're spending more than today than we spent in the Cold War when we had a real enemy in the Russians who could wipe us off the map, as opposed to a few people living in caves. I mean, I'm astounded that this basic information is not out there.
Well, that's correct. People, when we showed people this information, we said, was this more than you expected, less than you expected, about the same as you expected? And in most cases, a majority said this was more than they expected. So they were clearly surprised. And yes, that information is not clearly out there. And there are a lot of statements that are made that confuse people. For example, there are times where the defense budget is going up, and there's a projected increase, there's a budgeted increase, and then there's an action to slow down or reduce the increase, and that is reported as a cut, when in fact it's a cut relative to a bigger increase. It's just not as big as was originally planned. And that gives people people the impression that it's going up and down when, in fact, it's been steadily going upward.
So over the years, my understanding is that one of the ways that the Department of Defense has kept its budget down is by offsetting a lot of it in other departments. For example, nuclear weapons are in the Department of Energy, the Coast Guard's in the Department of Transportation, et cetera. So even the figures that you're giving the respondents to your survey, which apparently are a learning experience for them, you could argue that they're not actually the full figures in any case.
Well, there are all these different ways to put together the defense budget. They're not grossly different, but they are different on the margins. And the number we gave them was for what's called the national defense budget, which does include the spending on nuclear weapons in the Department of Energy and so on. So it is the more comprehensive number, but it's we're talking only about a few percentage points variance here.
Well, what was interesting about your survey, Stephen Cull, consulting the American people on national defense spending, was that the area that the greatest percentage of people wanted to cut was nuclear weapons.
Yes, we did take people through the different areas of the budget, not just the overarching number, and we told them what really was going on in each area, like air power and ground forces, naval forces, as well as nuclear weapons and some others. And then we gave them arguments for and against cutting in those areas as well. And nuclear weapons was the one that was cut the most in terms of percentage. It was cut on average 27%.
And that's 18% by Republicans and 35% by Democrats.
It was bipartisan.
Sure. What other areas did, for example, 60 Minutes did a piece on the F-22 Raptor, a plane that costs close to $500 million a copy, and then a couple of the pilots went on camera and took tremendous risk with their careers, saying they're not going to fly until they fix the problems with the oxygen and some kind of toxic fumes that are affecting the pilots. Is any indication that kind of I know 60 Minutes is a pretty popular show. I'm wondering whether when you talk about when you broke this down and talked about some of the Air Force air power systems, did that ever come up, the F-22 Raptor?
Not that one specifically, but we did ask about the F-35, and 54% opposed, or 54% favored canceling that program, and 52% favored canceling the development of a next-generation bomber.
So there's a general understanding in the public that the U.S. is considerably ahead of anybody and everybody on the planet in terms of...
That argument was presented to them, and large majorities found it convincing. So that it appears that does resonate with them.
Again,
overall, air power was existing air power is reduced on average 17%, and the development of new air capabilities was reduced on average 19%.
And how did they relate to manpower issues? In other words, are they more in favor of taking care of the men and women in uniform than the defense contractors?
Well, there was some support for raising the some co-pays for the families of military personnel, but there was opposition to increasing premiums or raising caps on payments for military retirees. There was some support for making modest changes in the pension system and slowing down the rate of growth of tax-exempt allowances, but there was resistance to increasing caps on wages and things like that for military personnel. So it was kind of a mixed bag, some things that they favored, some things they didn't. But they were certainly not looking for real deep cuts there.
Again, I'm speaking with Stephen Cull, who is the director of the Program for Public Consultation and a senior research scholar at the Center for International and Security Studies. And he is the lead author of a study just released, Consulting the American People on National Defense Spending. The Afghanistan question is an interesting one, given the diminished public support for the war in Afghanistan. I believe it's down to, what, about two-thirds of the country are opposed to the Afghan war and sort of want to get out yesterday. Tell me about what you've learned about the budget figures for Afghanistan.
Well, just to clarify the general poll numbers, about two-thirds are unhappy about the war, questioning whether it was a good idea, that kind of thing. But you only have a modest majority who say, we want to really just get out. But it's still, and only recently, has become a slight majority. Now, when we asked about spending there, on average, people wanted to cut the spending that is now proposed for 2013 by an additional 40%, or $35 billion. So that, and just in, that was actually the biggest percentage cut in any area.
So from $88 billion for 2013 war spending in Afghanistan down to $35
billion. No, it was cut $35 billion down to, I think, 53 or so.
Well, that's pretty substantial.
And, yes, that is a sharp cut.
And that surely has got to worry the Obama administration. I mean, you clarified the notion that two-thirds of the public are uncomfortable or unhappy with the war, where only a slight majority want us to get out.
An additional number would like to reduce the number of troops that we have there. Mm-hmm. And so that all kind of rolls into reducing the amount of money that we're spending there.
Well, and how did you present that in terms of what the president just announced recently, that they're going to pretty much pull most of the troops out by 2014 and leave, what, 25,000 behind or something?
Yeah, we didn't focus so much on that side of it. We did present the arguments for and against reducing our presence there, or speeding up the reduction of our presence there, some saying that it's not really doing much good. Others saying that it's very important to prevent the Taliban from returning because this could create a safe haven for Al Qaeda. So they heard both arguments, but in the end they quite clearly came down on the side of reducing the spending there. Which, of course, means reducing the number of troops there.
So when you say both arguments are made, do you have people making these arguments, or do you have these are written arguments?
These are written. This is done online, so people can take all the time they want to read the argument, and then they evaluate how convincing they think it is. Now, I want to clarify, though, that this the sample is not just limited to people who have internet access. This is a fully randomly selected sample, scientifically selected in all the standard ways. And people are recruited by telephone and by mail to be part of this panel that's run by a group called Knowledge Networks. And then if people don't have internet access, they're given internet access. So we have a fully representative sample. And then the survey is administered over the internet. And it's generally been found you get the best quality responses that way, because people can take all the time they want to really reread and think it through.
And again, the main findings are that three-quarters of the respondents favored cutting defense as a way to reduce the deficit, including two-thirds of Republicans, as well as nine out of 10 Democrats.
And on average, they reduced it 18%. With the Republicans reducing 12% and Democrats 22%.
And is this study, given that the Congress or the Republican House is pretty much adamantly refusing to budge on the defense budget at all, what is the likelihood of your study reaching them?
Well, I think it will get around. It's getting a fair amount of press coverage, and I've seen on television reporters asking members of Congress about it. So it's going to get some attention. Now, public opinion has limited influence on Congress, but I would say particularly these days when partisan agendas are so strong that the public has less influence. But it will enter into the picture to some extent. And it's true that the policymakers may just not have known what the public thinks, because, as I said before, there are some polls out there. If you just ask people, do you want to increase, decrease, or maintain the current level of defense spending, you don't have a majority that immediately say, I want to decrease. But when they get more information and see the whole picture, and they see how much goes to defense as compared to other items in the budget and so on, then a large majority say, oh, yeah, well, that's where we really need to make cuts to deal with the deficit.
And in terms of your survey, you refer to defense spending, not military spending, and semantics are important. And I take it that the assumption would be, had you framed it as military spending, the people may have wanted to even cut it further?
Perhaps. Those kinds of wording effects can be very strong when you just have one short question. But when you have a lot of information and people really get to think it through, it tends to then be somewhat less reactive to those little subtleties of wording.
Sure. Well, just in closing, Stephen Cull, tell me, you're a political psychologist. Tell me about what being a political psychologist involves.
Well, what we study is the psychology of how people react to political issues, how people think about political issues, feel about political issues, what they understand. It's easy to think of people as just being aligned with this party or that party, or having a very fixed point of view. But what we found, for example, in doing this study, is that people are complex. They can hear both sides of an issue. They don't say, well, I agree with this and I don't agree with that, and that's it. But they have a kind of inner Congress in their mind, where they agree with, to some extent, with both sides. Now, what's striking is that in the end, they came down firmly on one side more than the other. But what was clear, though, is that they were actually listening carefully to and recognizing the validity of arguments on both sides. And again, that's the kind of thing you don't see happening in Congress. And that's one of the reasons that people are so frustrated with Congress. They think that Congress behaves in a way that just isn't really consistent with the way normal people act. And if you were to map the public out on a, and Congress out on a sort of left-right spectrum, you would have a kind of, in Congress, you have a cluster on the left and a cluster on the right and very little in the middle. The public is just the opposite. They're a kind of normal curve around the middle. They cluster around the middle. And thus they're able to see both sides. And it creates a kind of, some confusion to some extent, because they're hearing both sides in their mind, but still, in the end, they're able to make decisions, hard decisions, that are much more, much harder than the kinds of decisions that Congress makes.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Stephen Cull.
You're welcome.
Again, I've been speaking with Stephen Cull. He's a political psychologist. He's the director of the Program for Public Consultation and a senior research scholar at the Center for International and Security Studies at the University of Maryland. And he's been, for the past 18 years, conducting these in-depth studies of public opinion on policy issues, and has worked extensively with the U.S. Congressional staff, State Department officials, the United Nations, and has consulted with the U.S. Congress, NATO, and the European Commission. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with a veteran financial reporter about the latest excess on Wall Street.
How low were you willing to go before you reach all yourself?